6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Podcast, brought to you by CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network. I'm your host, Anna Forsyth, aForsyth03 on the Twitter. Hopefully you know that by now. Not with me today is Chris Golden at Lightforce. If you listened to last week's episode or you've seen on our Discord, dealing with a few things bigger than Canucks hockey, bigger than the podcast. So, not here for the moment, but no worries at all because we have a more than able replacement in Rob Williams, who is the sports editor of Daily Hive Vancouver and covers sports across the network for Offside Daily Hive. Rob Williams, Rob the Hockey Guy, welcome, and how are you doing?
I'm really well. Thanks for having me.
This is exciting. Absolutely.
I haven't done a podcast in quite some time, so this is very exciting for me.
I think last time we had you on was one of our more chaotic episodes. I mean, in the library hotbox, so always a bit chaotic with that. But then I think we had double booked with somebody. It was all very crazy. So hopefully a bit calmer this time.
Yeah, I just remember everyone just sweating like profusely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some like very small silver linings to the pandemic, and not being in the hotbox is one of them.
Definitely.
So you've been around training camp, preseason, around the Canucks. What's the mood been like from your standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think the story of training camp is, you know, other than the Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes contracts, which I think everyone remained very calm with, and I think people kind of saw it playing out similar to what happened, right? Like, they missed the first week, they got signed before the second week, they're going to play in a couple of preseason games, everything should be fine, no problems. I think the big surprise was obvious, was what we saw right at the start of training camp is Travis Hamonic. Where is he? Why isn't he here? Personal reasons, should we be just leaving that as is? Or it certainly seems like it could be vaccine related. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, and I know that, you know, it's personal reasons, and if it is, you know, legitimately something totally unrelated to the vaccine, I just don't understand why they wouldn't say, hey, everyone, back off. It has nothing to do with the vaccine.
Yeah.
And it's personal reasons for some other reason, and then everyone would just respect it, right? So it would, you know, deducing from that, like it has to be, it just seems like it has to be to do with the vaccine, you know, especially because Benning's basically saying they're going to be fully vaccinated, which means they're not, the team is not fully vaccinated right now. Okay, so who's not fully vaccinated? Maybe it's the person with the mystery reason for his absence. So anyways, I think that's the big thing with training camp and preseason. And in a lot of ways, it's been really hard to gauge things like lines and defensive pairs because they've had so many people missing. I think my article after the first day of training camp, not even on ice sessions, but just the first day, was like the Canucks missing seven like regulars on the first day. It's incredible. So that's training camp has been so much about who isn't here rather than who is here.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. The kind of prevailing tone is confusion. So let's jump into Rewind, and we'll kind of dig a little deeper into the camp storylines, the chemistry in there, and what they've looked like in preseason. So you said one of the big surprises was the absence of Hamonic. Is there any surprises from a positive standpoint in terms of performances you saw at camp, even, you know, just a small bit above expectations?
Yeah, I think Nils Höglander is the real bright light, especially after Sunday's game. He looks like he's potentially going to take a step forward this season, and I think that's really exciting because he had a very impressive rookie season. He looks quick. He looks confident with the puck. So for me, that's a real, I don't know if it's a big surprise, but you never really know how a player is going to adjust from season to season. Not every player takes a step forward. I mean, look no further than Quinn Hughes. He took a bit of a step backwards in his second season. He wasn't quite as he wasn't as dominant in both ends of the ice as he was during his first season. So to see Höglander excelling as he has, I think, is really nice to see. I think the other thing is Oliver Ekman-Larsson's looked impressive so far. All eyes are going to be on him, and of course, he's not going to change anyone's mind positively or negatively from preseason because he's a veteran player. But I know Travis Green was saying it after Sunday's game. The thing that he didn't quite realize about Ekman-Larsson was how, I can't remember the exact words he used, but something to the effect of how physical and how engaged he was out there. And that for me is something that I guess I hadn't realized as well, is just how tough a game he plays. He's been involved physically in every preseason game so far. So those two guys are really the two for me that have stood out so far.
Yeah, I think with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, there's never, he would have to do a whole lot to live up to his price tag, but we've paid that amount now, and that's the contract he's on. So you've only got to hope for the best and hope he rebounds at least a bit. Maybe not to his former elite levels, but.
And I don't even think he needs to be a top flight number one defenseman for this contract or for the trade to work out. I mean, if he's a number two defenseman, like a legitimate number two for them, that's a steal. Like that becomes huge. Now he's under contract forever, so he's going to have to be good for a few more years into his 30s. I think we all hope that this is not a Louis Erickson situation where he's terrible right off the hop in year one, and you go, okay, there's five more years of this. Mm-hmm. Cross your fingers. Ekman-Larsson's worst critics, I don't think, are predicting Louis Erickson doomsday scenarios, but he's such an important player for them, not only this year, but in the years to come. Can he age gracefully? Can he be closer to that player that was such an excellent defenseman for the Coyotes for so many years, rather than the guy that's appearing to be more on the downside of his career the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Louis Erickson, he's found himself a new lease of life, so who knows what change of scene can do.
Yeah, he's got what, two goals and an assist in two games? Just lighting it up. I can't wait for everyone to be like, why did they trade him?
Yeah. And then for him to fall off a cliff again. But who knows? Wish him the very best. But yeah, outside of the surprises, was there anyone who kind of, I don't want to say let you down, that seems a bit strong, but wasn't quite as impressive as you hoped?
Yeah, what's funny is before Sunday's game, I was thinking, geez, this is going to be, this is an important game for Vasily Podkolzin. This could be a narrative shifting game, depending on what happens in it. Of course, he started on the fourth line. He didn't get very much ice time. He got fourth line minutes the whole game. He didn't really stand out in any meaningful way. To me, that's now, okay, now he's, played a couple games in preseason and hasn't shown a ton. And of course, it's most concerning, the later you get into the preseason, the less you show, the more concerning it is, because the competition's getting better as each team has, makes their cuts, and the hockey begins to look more and more like NHL hockey. So for me, Podkolzin, the fact that Green put him on the fourth line raised my eyebrows. So even just that in itself, I'm thinking, okay, what is he, you know, what is, why is he on the fourth line? What is Green seeing that, that causes him to put their top prospect not in a great, you know, position to succeed? So I'm really curious about that. And I think that now kind of the microscope is going to be on Podkolzin the rest of the way. He doesn't need to show anything. Like, he's still a very young player. And if he starts in Abbotsford, that's not the end of the world. I think we're so used to, the pressure to perform for a top prospect coming into your first training camp with the Canucks it's like almost expected now that you just come in and become an impact player, because like Hoglander did it. Hoglander was supposed to be the end of that string. You know, it was the end of the Calder nominees, right? And Hoglander didn't get nominated for the Calder, but he was a very effective player for them. And I think everyone's sort of expecting Podkolzin to do the same. You know, he's from the same draft year as Hoglander. He was drafted top 10. So it's a little disappointing. And I say this having noticed some things that I liked about his game.
Yeah.
Even just like the first training camp, it's one of those where you just sort of look up and go, oh yeah, there's Podkolzin coming in, and like he rings a puck off the bar, he rings a shot top corner. I mean, he's doing it against like an AHL or ECHL goalies, right? So you don't, but you know, from my vantage point, he looked like he had a very heavy shot and looked very accurate. And even that game in Abbotsford, just noticing him tracking back into the neutral zone and picking up his check and picking off pucks, the types of things that we saw him do, in the KHL and the World Juniors, having that really good defensive awareness. So I'm not like, oh, I'm giving up on Podkolzin yet, but it's definitely a concerning moment. I think that's the thing for me right now. I'm like, okay, what's going to happen with Podkolzin? Because I think that I was a lot, I think 5 days ago I was a lot more sure that he was going to be, on the third line to start the season.
Yeah, I blame Chris Faber personally because he got us too hyped up on Podkolzin, so I'm blaming him.
I agree. I fully agree.
Yeah. And just looking kind of in the depth of the lineup, we kind of finally have that depth group that are actually paid like the depth forwards they are. We've obviously missing Tyler Mott, still missing Brandon Sutter. Is there anyone you could see like potentially earning a spot? I know like Kyle Burrows is still hanging around the dollar store Burrows, as it were, but
yeah, I mean, it's wide open right now, right? So
yeah.
If you look at it, it looks for sure like Hamonic will not be starting the season with the team. Does that mean that a player like Brad Hunt moves from the left side to the right side? That would seem to be a reasonable option. Otherwise, Madison Bowie, is it
yeah,
Kyle Burrows? I mean, there's not a ton of really, slam dunk intriguing options out there. Are you going to play Olli Juolevi and Jack Rathbone on the same pairing with one of them on their wrong side? Like, yeah, none of these really, really sound like great options. I think that, there's going to be a lot of rumors, and it's already started to happen. Are the Canucks going to pick up somebody off waivers? Would they would they sign a player like Jason Demers in free agency? Can they fit them under the cap if Hamonic's still going to be around and counting? Those are a lot of questions that we're going to be asking. And that's on defense up front. I think we were seeing a player like Phil DiGiuseppe, my favorite name on the Canucks in quite some time.
Yeah, it's pretty good,
right? He's been used prominently in a penalty killing role every time he's played in preseason. So that seems like a player that's kind of being earmarked for a fourth line role on the Canucks. He's got some NHL experience. So that seems like a guy that's going to make this team, where I think if Tyler Mott, Brandon Sutter, everybody was in the lineup, he'd be a bubble player, right? but they're going to need somebody to kill penalties. And this is how thin they are on killing on penalty killers. You know, Di Giuseppe hasn't been like a penalty killer in the NHL. And they're like, okay, this fringe NHL player, he's going to start killing penalties for us. And now he's like our indispensable fourth line penalty killer. You know, not the best situation to be in. And I can't say that he's like really turned my head in preseason, but he's, you know, if he can be an effective two-way player that you don't really notice all that much, except he just kind of does the right things. You know, I think that that's a player that Travis Green will want on his fourth line. So that's a guy. And then who's going to play fourth line center without Brent Sutter here? It's Justin Dowling, or it's Nick Batan, or it's Matthew Highmore. Like, you can tell by the excitement in my voice of how I feel about these options, right? I don't know what they do in that respect. I know they can also move JT Miller to the middle. I don't think that's an option. Like, for me, that's just – I just don't see that as a credible option. You know, Brandon Sutter being – you know, losing your fourth line center should not mean moving one of your best players out of position, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I think Miller starts on the wing. But, yeah, there's so many moving parts there. And I think you're just looking for somebody that's just going to be like just reliable, right? Like that's the type of player that the Canucks are going to be wanting to have in their you know, on their fourth line and killing penalties. And they're going to need somebody to win faceoffs on the penalty kill, unless they have to opt Miller on the PK. And you know, I think what we've seen before with Miller on the PK is, you know, then if he plays PK, then now he's all of a sudden playing 23, 24 minutes a night. That's too much for him.
Yeah. And do you think we're even getting close to seeing some of the, like, pairings or the lines in action? Or are we going to have to wait and see when Pettersson and Quinn make it into the lineup to actually see what we have in terms of chemistry?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see little bits and pieces. Like Sunday night, I was sitting next to Daniel Wagner in the press box, and I think I said to him, like, you know, there's one real defense pair and one like real forward line that we're watching tonight. Like everything else is fake. Everything else is not like a real like alignment here. And it was, you know, it's Ekman-Larsson and Poolman. They've been paired together right from the start of training camp. So I think that's definitely their matchup defense pair against the other team's top lines. That seems very obvious. After that, it's been, you know, we've seen a lot of Horvat and Pearson together. So I think we're going to see those two together. And, you know, you start looking at, okay, well, how's this going to break down with lines? And you think, well, okay, Connor Garland with Horvat makes a lot of sense. But, you know, Hoglander next to on the line with Pearson and Horvat is what we saw on Sunday, and that looked pretty good. So I don't know. I think you can get little pieces here and there, but I think prior to training camp, a lot of people, when they were mocking up their lines, had Pearson on the third line with Jason Dickinson, and that's something we haven't really seen yet. So I think that gives us a clue there that maybe Pearson and Horvat are going to be a thing again, at least to start the season.
Right, and they have shown good chemistry in the past. It's just when you insert a couple of actually strong forwards into the lineup in Garland Dickinson, you kind of hope for some more competition there.
Yeah, and what's going to be your matchup checking line, right? Like, is Dickinson going to be used in that kind of a role where, I mean, I think back to when Travis Green first started coaching the Canucks, and he had Sutter was always in this matchup role, and Sutter would play a ton because because Green would just set up this like checking line with just a bunch of guys that are like, you know, good two-way players to go up against the other team. So, you know, I was wondering if that was going to be an option with Pearson, Dickinson, and maybe Pod Colson, depending on what type of player Pod Colson is in his first year. And that seemed like, you know, something where you'd have like two-way players, big, strong players going up against the other team's top lines. But I don't know if we're going to see that. I don't know, you know, we don't know a ton about Dickinson, you know, other, you know, I don't know about you, but I didn't have like a, you know, I didn't pay extra careful attention to him when he was in Dallas. Yeah. You know, is he most well suited for that role, or is that a role that really still needs to be shared with Horvat, going forward? So it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure. I guess finally on sort of camp and preseason storylines, we've seen a good mix of all the different goalies. What do you make of, you know, with the no movement clause, we're presuming Clark is backing up Demko. What do you make of the rest of the goalies, how they shake out? Like, Mikey DiPietro has obviously been impressing, but yeah, how do you think they're going to develop him and balance that with the other goalies?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're going to see DiPietro be the starter in Abbotsford, and he's going to play, and he's going to play a lot, which is, mm-hmm. you know, something he definitely needs right now. You know, so I think that's for sure, and I think your assessment's right with Halak. He's going to be the backup, and you know, barring any injuries or barring any like really substandard play by Halak, I think that that's the way it's going to stay for the majority of the season. What they do with goalies number 4 and 5, your guess is as good as mine. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on that. I had to look up Spencer. His first name is Spencer. Okay, Spencer Martin.
Spencer Martin.
fun fact. Yeah, go ahead.
Brother-in-law of Jonah Gadjevich. So,
is he really? Oh, well, yeah. Okay, there you go. Yeah, no, I remember seeing him in training camp, and I was like, Martin. I was like, I forgot they picked up a goalie named Martin. I was like,
yeah.
I was calling him Martin the goalie because I was like, who is this guy? So no, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on those last two guys, but you know, we'll have to wait and see who the backup in Abbotsford is.
Yeah, I'm just curious because I know they've done the sort of three goalie thing in the past, especially when they had an older goalie in Backman, but. Do you want to do that when you're trying to like make Mikey into a starter and they don't have an ECHL team anymore? So
I just think
it's tricky. Yeah.
Well, they'll be able to find their third goalie a place to play though.
I'm sure they will. I guess.
But yeah, three goalies is just an awkward thing for a hockey team, right? It's just like you have practice, there's two nets, you got three goalies. It's just awkward. So, and you end up having one goalie just, you know, being in mothballs. So I don't think that's a good situation for a team at pretty much every level.
Yeah, you're probably right there. Okay, well, as we mentioned right off the top, we do have new contracts for Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. So we'll take a short break and then we'll take a little dive into that.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Yep, so the big news that we were waiting for finally happened. It was teased for quite a few days. But finally, yeah, the news came out. Quinn Hughes, 6 times 7.85. Elias Pettersson, 3 times 7.35. First of all, did either of the term or numbers surprise you, impress you?
Yeah, I mean, I feel it's nice. I feel like we're out of like the era of like every contract the Canucks sign just sort of being like appallingly like out of whack with what it should be. Like, do you remember for like, I want to say it was like the first 3-4 years of Benning's tenure, it would be like Lucas Spezza's getting how much money? Like Derek Dorsett, really? That many years? So it's nice to be in an era now where it still happens a little bit, but it's not like consistently that all the time. So I think that in this case, I think that the Quinn Hughes number, I think the term, I think, was a pleasant surprise with Hughes. We kept talking about bridge deals, and I think in the back of my mind, I guess I was expecting bridge deals for both players. To see a 6-year deal for Hughes, I think was a, I don't know if it was a surprise, but I think it was nice to see. Pettersson on the 3-year deal. I mean, again, you know, it's nice to have, you know, the players these two players could be the, end up being the two best players in Canucks history. So you want to lock them up for as long as possible, but 3 years is fine. It's not a 2-year deal. I think would have been a little bit more alarming. 3 years is, it's fine. And we knew that they wouldn't be able to sign both players long-term, because of the cap situation. So that was all fine. So I don't know if there was anything like drastically, that drastically surprised me, but, and of course, Pettersson being on the 3-year deal, one of the contracts that was most often brought up was the Matthew Barzal deal signed back in January, and that was 3x7, or 7x3, and this is 7.35x3. So that, similar deals, I think it makes a lot of sense. It seems like fair deals for both players, and it was one of those deals. I think you can gauge by the Twitter reaction. There wasn't fury on Twitter. People weren't like celebrating. It was just sort of like, great, they got them signed. They're going to be back in camp. Let's go. So I think that was pretty much my reaction as well. Fair deals for both players.
The chat, as negotiations went on, was who's going to blink first. What do you think happened? Who blinked? Was it the players forcing the issue of trying to get into camp, or Canucks finally folded on money?
I don't really have a great read on it, to be honest. I think on all these, it's rare that just one player, that one side just completely folds. So it's probably a bit. It's always a bit of both in these situations, I think. But yeah, I don't really have a great read on that. What do you think?
It's hard to say, but I do think it would have been an absolute disaster if they missed any of the regular season, even one game. I think would just be such a huge hit for Canucks PR-wise. I think it's a pretty reasonable job. They're good value, but it's hard to give Benning too much credit when the circumstances that led to this were all of his own creation. It's good under the circumstances, but he made the circumstances, so.
Definitely. I mean, I would take it a step further on, if it would have been a disaster if they missed any regular season games, but even if they missed, the whole preseason.
Right.
And didn't get any preseason games in. Even if it, this was going to be the week. If they were still unsigned by this week, the pressure was really going to be on. So I think the fact that they're going to get a few practices in, then they're going to get two preseason games. That's kind of all they need, right? So I think that sort of, this was the time where they could come back and knock on wood, everybody, they should be able to hit the ground running.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, do you think them missing preseason is a big deal from the fans' perspective? Or, do you think players of their caliber need much preparation? Do you think they'll slot back in fairly quickly?
Oh, I think so. I mean, yeah, players are, they didn't have to go through the bag skate, I guess. Maybe I wonder if that's part in the back of players' minds when they're, holding out for a new deal, going, the first week of training camp kind of sucks anyways.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world to okay, I'll hold out the first week that I hate, and then okay, let's make sure we get a deal done. So I do wonder if that's in the back of anyone's minds as well. But no, they should be in shape, and they're young, right? They're 21 and 22. These guys should be totally fine.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, even them on the ice the other day was just looked like they hadn't missed a step. What I was gonna say is, PD and Quinn, do you think there's ill feeling there, or do you think, I guess more from a Pettersson perspective, are the Canucks on the back foot now they have 3 years to prove something to him, or where do you think that kind of relationship is at?
Yeah, no, I don't think it doesn't sound like there's any rumblings of, like, you know, animosity between Pedersen or Hughes and the team. The fact that there were so few rumors leaking out, I think, was a really good sign for that as well. And do they have something to prove? I think every team always has something to prove, especially, you know, with star players. I think we've seen from time to time in the NHL, and I think we're seeing a little bit with Jack Eichel right now, and I think we saw with, I'm thinking back to Rick Nash with the Blue Jackets. Remember how they just did nothing, and he was this, you know, star player for them. Didn't get a sniff of the playoffs, and eventually he wanted out. I think you can see that with star players. You know, if they feel like their career and their prime is wasting away, that eventually they'll want out. So, if the Canucks stumble and bumble their way the next few years, then maybe that's becomes an issue. I don't foresee that necessarily, but yeah, I think every player you're always under the microscope. As a team, you've got to prove yourself to players, especially once they begin getting options, which Pedersen will be able to become an unrestricted free agent, a year after his current contract expires.
Right. So is there a sort of ceiling or a level you think Canucks have to hit, like deep playoff run or qualifying for the playoffs, or it's just going to depend where the team is at and if they have the potential?
Yeah, I think it's just don't be like a doormat for the next few years, right? Like, and I'm trying to think of like the worst case scenario of what could happen. I mean, there's so many worst case scenario options, right? But like, let's say Ekman-Larsson just immediately becomes like Louis Erickson defenseman version. It's tough to map that something like that out, like a real doomsday scenario like that, because they have so many good young players, and right. They also all seem to be really tight. Like Hughes and Pedersen, by all accounts, are really good friends, and so is Besser with that group, and Horvat gets along with everybody as well. And then, you know, all of those players being so young and so good and getting along, I think, bodes well for the Canucks. And that's the type of place that you're going to want to continue playing in. So I think that works in his favor for sure, and works in the Canucks' favor.
Well, that's a hopeful outlook. So I buy into it for sure. Well, I think that's it for the Quinn and PV deals. We'll come back after a very short break for some quick-fire questions and some final thoughts on where the season is heading. So I did send you these questions in advance, so I don't know how quick-fire they are, but I'm hoping you didn't like think too deeply about them. But they're just a bit of fun, so don't like worry, we're not gonna write an article about you.
I've been stressing all afternoon about this.
Yeah, my probing questions. All right, first up, if you could guarantee a straight and honest answer with no professional consequences for yourself, what one question would you ask Travis or the players?
I'd want to ask like Bo Horvat. He's been with the Canucks the longest. He's so well media trained, you know. Mm-hmm. He never says the wrong thing, but if you could get like truth serum from him, you'd want to ask what's the thing that drove you the most nuts, like about a player move, like were you like, oh my god, Lucas Pisa, how much? what was it like what has really made you go like, what about management have you just been like up in arms with? Like what made you do that the most? Like that would be, if you could get an honest answer out of Horvat for that, and it that would be impossible, I think, but if you could,
yeah.
I think that would be interesting to me for a player that's been there throughout the whole Benning tenure, you know, as tumultuous as it's been with fans and media and everyone in the team.
Yeah. I think you're right. Like, I think Bo would be the hardest one to crack, too, because even Travis, he has his lines, but he will very occasionally slip and show some personality or some reaction, but Bo just doesn't. Ever.
I mean, I wouldn't say he doesn't show personality. I mean,
no,
yeah,
I mean, but he doesn't ever like stray from the line.
Yeah. Like, I think he's spoken up at times to, you know, to say something like, you know, I think about when Don Cherry got let go and he actually was like, you know, basically saying there's no place for that in our game and, or something to the words to those effects. You know, so I think he's done that, but yeah, in terms of like really rocking the boat or really causing a controversy, like he's kind of like he's from the Henrik Sedin cloth, I think in that respect.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of a Canuck captain.
Yeah. I mean, he is the perfect captain really. But it was actually lovely to see him get a bit excited when asked about the fans. So I do think he genuinely cares about that. Which was nice to see.
Definitely. I mean, he does give good answers. He just doesn't say that anything wrong, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's that he's not Alex Edler, right? Like, he's not like a guy that just doesn't give those answers.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But he also doesn't ever like, you know, say something that causes like a huge controversy. Like maybe we've seen Marcus Naslin or Luongo when they were captain, mm-hmm. like that, you know, they would occasionally, you know, say something that kind of really got blown up big. And I don't think we've really seen that from Horvat yet.
Yeah. And in this town, it really would happen. So he's doing pretty well. Next question. What one non-hockey ops decision would you make on the team's behalf if you could change it tomorrow for the upcoming season? Would you like add a jersey, like add a theme night, or like change a player nickname?
Okay, any? Yeah. So this one I did think of right away. The Horvat one, I that one stressed me out, and I started thinking of something. but this one I thought of right away, and it's changing the colors of the seats.
Nice.
Do you remember that? Like, do you remember that this was Jeff Stipek when he was the, I think COO or whatever his title was a few years ago. Sort of unprompted on I think it was an interview on TSN 1040, basically said that they were looking at potentially changing the colors of the seats and going away from the maroon and having like blue and green stripes and it'd be all Canuck colors. And this like oddly like excited a lot of people in the fan base.
Yeah.
And, like people like really thought this was cool, myself included. And then like Stipek was gone and then it just kind of like, that just sort of went away, and any questions about that with any high ranking person with the Canucks or I don't know if Eccolini ever even talked about it as well. Trent Carroll, I know was asked about it. Mm-hmm. I asked Trent Carroll about this, and it was like, they was sort of just like, no, yeah, no, the seats are fine. Like, we're not going to change the seats. And it was just sort of like, they acted like nobody ever brought this up in a high profile interview. So that is what I want. I want blue and green seats. I think it would look cool. I think it would look, do you remember like the Sedin night? They had the 33 and the 22 up in the crowd.
Yep.
I know I look at like the Rogers Place in Edmonton has the big oil drop in the seats.
Right.
I think it looks really cool, to have that. So that would be mine, the change the seats.
I mean, I'm 100% with you. I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, but I did have a funny Twitter interaction when I mentioned that they still hadn't changed the seats after however long without fans. And got a lot of flack for that because apparently signing Quinn and Petey was more important and you can't do both at once. So,
yeah. And by the way, one of my favorite things is how they still have Orca Bay seats all over the place. I actually kind of do love that though. Like whenever, especially whenever they're doing like a player availability on Zoom, and there'd always be like these Orca Bay seats, before the player would sit down. And I'm sort of convinced that Canucks PR maybe started choosing non Orca Bay seats, like they have just plain maroon seats, and they started choosing some of those because I kept screenshotting every time there was an Orca Bay logo. But but they still exist; they're everywhere. So. I don't know. That kind of I oddly like that. If you're going to go maroon, I like go like straight retro with the Orca Bay logo.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on that one. Let's move on to the next one. Best moment you've witnessed at a Canucks game, firstly as a fan and then as a media member.
Yeah. Well, let's start as a fan. As a fan for me, I was at the when Burroughs slayed the Dragon.
That's easy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty easy. I've been lucky to go to a lot of big games in 2011 as a fan. That was probably it. I was also it's funny because the other one is Burroughs scoring in overtime of game two in the finals, which now looking back, it's like, wow, they didn't end up winning it. But in that moment, that was like as sure as I've ever been that the Canucks were going to win the Stanley Cup. I'm skeptical always. I don't think you can be a true Canucks fan unless you're expecting doom and gloom and just, kind of the rule of being a Canucks fan is whenever you think they've got it, they don't. Right. That's sort of, just going back through history. So that for me is, those are the two moments for me that really stand out. And then the other one is the one that's not, can't be tarnished is the last Sedin night. And I remember that one. I kind of had a decision to make on that one. So I was at work and we got the news. Oh my God, the Sedins are retiring. And I quickly wrote up the story, like Sedin's announced, they're going to be retiring and they're going to play two more games. And I had a decision. I was like, okay, do I want to go to that last game as media or do I want to sit in the seats? And I was like, you know what? So I quickly published the article and then I quickly went to Ticketmaster and bought two seats in like the last row of Rogers Arena. And then I checked back like a half an hour later and saw that it was sold out. And then shortly after I wrote the story about how ticket prices are skyrocketing for the last city night. So that was a fun little sequence.
Yeah, I actually, I managed to go to that game for like $30 because me and my friend Nadine, who we decided to go to one last game that season. And we're like, this is going to be terrible, but let's just go anyway because it's the last home game. We'll just go. And we sat in the cheap seats. And then less than a week later, there was the announcement. So we got pretty lucky.
What was funny? I felt like I recognized so many people like walking around the concourse that night. And I remember it just seemed like everyone that was like the most diehard Canucks fans found a way into the building that night.
Right, exactly.
I don't have anything to calibrate this or confirm this, but it just felt like it was just somehow the biggest Canucks fans just ended up at that game. And what a finish. I don't think anyone, when I bought my tickets, I was not imagining that. Like, that was incredible. So that one can never be tarnished.
A little bit of magic.
Yeah, that one will never be tarnished. But those are the most fun moments for me as a fan. As a media member, Anna, I was in the press box for the first time in late in the year, the 2016-2017 season was first time for me being in the press box. Or was it? Sorry, no, I'm getting my years mixed up. Late 2015 was the first time I ever went in the press box. The Canucks have not played a playoff game at Rogers Arena since I've been a full-fledged member of the media. There have not been a lot of great moments. I mean, watching. The best moments would have been games I watched on television during the bubble, right? Chris Tanev sending the Canucks into to the playoffs was a cool moment. I think there was a lot of special moments from that playoff run, as weird and COVID-y and empty arena as it was. But yeah, it's a weird, it's been an amazing tenure of Canucks history for me while I've been in the media. I'm still waiting to go to my first, first playoff game or first playoff, you know, practice day during the playoffs would be amazing to see. So I'm still waiting for a good moment while I've been a media member.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's a good, honest answer. I feel like I'm trying to remember even good games I've been at in the last few years. And I feel like all the good ones, we probably were pretty well right next to each other in the seats. So. Yeah, and finally, these really haven't been quickfire at all, but I just love to chat. But anyway, final quickfire question. What is the best snack available at any pro sports arena you've been to? Well, actually, it doesn't have to be pro if you had something really good at junior. Like
a snack. I'll tell you what my go-to is at Rogers Arena. It's not really a snack, but the best thing to get at Rogers Arena, and I'm planning to write an article about this, about the best food to eat at Rogers Arena.
Okay.
The best is without a doubt Triple O's. That is the best value for money. If you need like you want like a meal, I feel like Triple O's is everything's overpriced, but like good value for money. I feel like Triple O's is without a doubt the way to go at a Canucks game.
Okay. For me, that is just speaks to someone who grew up here and has been on the ferries too much. Like Triple O's is not that good.
Wow.
It's fine, but like I kind of think you just have to splash the cash and get a fancy hot dog at Steamers or a carve sandwich. And they're more expensive, but they're good.
I like them, but a hot dog's not going to fill you. That's not dinner. That's you know, that's a...
The fancy ones, right. They have, like, seafood on.
Yeah, no, that's a nice snack, but, like, yeah, I guess it's a snack, but, like, that's a snack that's priced like a meal. So, I'm not sure about that.
You're not wrong.
The sandwiches are nice. I here's my problem with the sandwiches. They come with, like, potato chips. And that's just... I don't know.
It's very English, so I don't mind it really.
I guess
but...
so. Comes with crisps, not chips. Yeah. No, you gotta have like the fries with it. That's a game changer for sure.
Okay. Well, these are your questions. So.
I will admit, for all the games that the media attended last season, there wasn't like the. Like the sort of the traditional like buffet media meal. It was basically media just had access to Triple O's. So there was a lot of Triple O's eaten last season. So
maybe you're not like if you had, feeling it.
Like, well, I mean, I'm just saying like if you attended like multiple games in a row, it was like, okay, it's a lot of Triple O's. But at the same time, without the crowd there, it was like and with how awful that team was, it was like, and also like, right, you know, right and during COVID when nobody's really doing anything fun, it was like there were times where I'm like, man, I'm looking forward to that Triple O's. Gotta get I don't know how I'm not I should get like a sponsorship from Triple O's or something, but
yeah.
I would be a good brand ambassador. But yeah, no, that Triple O's, I love it.
Okay, well, we'll allow it, I guess. I think honestly, like, I'm just excited to get back in and play $17 for a beer and $20 for a hot dog. Like, I'm excited about that, honestly.
Okay, so this is one thing. I didn't research this at the game on Sunday because I was up in the press box. But I know at BC Place, they're now charging tax on top of all of their concession prices. I wonder if Rogers Arena is going to do the same thing because they've both stadiums have gone cashless, and it's sort of like the, you know, stadiums traditionally just include the prices in their, you know, the price you see is the price you pay because they don't want to deal with a bunch of loose change, right? Because they need to get everything moving. But in a cashless environment, I wonder if they start going to, you know, tax on top of the price you see.
Right. $20 for a beer then.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't surprise me. And it's gonna, so I wonder if it's gonna get a lot more expensive, or at least a little bit more expensive.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who used to work in an arena, and I've dealt with all the people yelling at me for how expensive products are when I'm making minimum wage, so I'm never gonna do that to someone who works in an arena. So the price is the price, whatever. But yeah, I think we're all excited to, you know, I think there's a little bit more hope this season than last, so and having the fans back in will make a huge difference.
I think I'm just so excited to have fans in the arena and just not have those, like, just that miserable, empty arena feeling was just so brutal. Like, just,
yeah.
Even we saw even that, like, the games in Montreal, like, the difference between, like, some fans and no fans,
yeah,
is massive. So even if it's at 50% capacity at Rogers Arena, and they're still hopeful that they're going to go, potentially be able to fill the building. That's going to be just such a difference. It's just that, yeah. I just hate that silence. That silence is just so brutal in the past. So it's going to be exciting. It's exciting to go to the rink again. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. And I never want to see like a staff member throwing out like a single hat for a hat trick ever again. So yeah, let's hope we're like moving onwards and upwards with that. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Rob. I'll just do a bit of housekeeping to finish us off. You can find us on Twitter at the C4 podcast. That's also us on Facebook. We're on Patreon as well. With that, you get access to a special Discord group. You get access to additional podcasts. So check us out on there if you want to support us and help us keep the lights on. Discord is where you'll find us talking puck outside of the podcasts. It's a great community when Canucks Twitter is being a bit much. So you can find us there, discord.io/C4podcast. Lots of like-minded fans. But yeah, any final thoughts, Rob?
I feel like I've been talking a lot here. I don't know. I'm just excited to see hopefully a competitive team this season. Hopefully they're a playoff team. Wouldn't it be fun to watch playoff hockey at Rogers Arena again? It's been way too long.
Lovely. Well, I was going to add some final thoughts, but that's a lovely place to end it, I think. And as everyone knows, we have the Positive Podcast now. We are the Playoff Podcast, so wholeheartedly support that. We're trying to stick to that positive outlook. but on behalf of Chris Golden at Lightforce, from me, Anna Forsyth at aforsyth03, with our guest, Rob Williams at Rob the Hockey Guy on Twitter, we out.